just want to make it quick. They'll go ahead and say something really quickly, and the main reason that they want to do it now is they've been up pretty much for the last several days, and rather than doing separate interviews back at the Red Lion where the Volunteer Center is, they decided that they would rather just make a statement to everybody now, if you could respect that, because they've been up since pretty much 2:30 this morning.
I'd like to thank all of you for being here and helping us trying to find our daughter. And we'd just like to send a message out there that whoever has her, please, please, please let her go. Bring her back.
We love her so much. We want her back. Please, let us have her back.
Yes. We want her and our grandson home safely and immediately, so please bring her back to us.
If you guys have questions, go ahead.
Lacey was just a loving, happy, generous, vivacious person. She just, Lacey loves life. She loves people. She loves entertaining. She's happy. She and Scott are just so much in love. They're just, I think everybody envies their relationship. They're just perfect together. They have a wonderful life. They're looking forward to having their baby. They've waited a long time. They've tried for a long time to have a baby, and she finally became pregnant. And this is just the center of her world, is to have her baby and be with her husband.
How do you guys keep up hope?
We have to keep up hope. We have to.
It's out of our hands.
A lot of prayers, a lot of friends, a lot of support from the community, the police department, everybody. Everybody has just been phenomenal here. It's just been wonderful. That's how we keep up hope. No, it's helped tremendously. We're just amazed. It's just a wonderful
community.
Everybody's
been caring about us.
I imagine over the last few days you've thought about anyone she knew or anyone in her life that may have wanted wrong for her.
No. Have you come up with nobody. Anything? Everybody liked Lacey. She didn't have enemies. Lacey was just, she's the kind of person that smile and talk to anybody. She was just a friendly, outgoing, wonderful person. She is.
Have they already decorated the nursery and
all
things
done.
All ready for the baby?
The baby's room is ready and has been. They're ready for their baby. And we're ready for Lacey and her baby.
We want her home.
February 10th.
What were they planning to do for Christmas?
They were supposed to come to our house Christmas Eve, and then we were going to their house Christmas morning. And she was looking forward to it. There's somebody has Lacey. Lacey would never just walk away.
No. Somebody knows where she's at.
And we want her back. Please bring her back to us.
Please.
Did you have reservations about the walk she took?
I was always
feel you're safe when you walk in the park.
In the park, she felt very comfortable with her dog. She and Scott many times would go for the walks with her dog, and she would go by herself. She was not concerned about it. She felt very comfortable, and in the area that she walked, she felt safe.
Well, you lived in the area a long time.
I've lived in this area all of my life.
Yeah, so you're familiar.
And so has Lacey, except for her years in San Luis Obispo.
You're comfortable there yourself?
It's a nice neighborhood.
Are you disappointed by the suspicion that's being cast on Scott?
Of course I am.
Absolutely.
Everybody's feeling different.
We need to focus on Lacey and getting Lacey back.
Yes, we want
to get
important. We want her home. And everybody's behind us. Let's get her home. Safe.
I think the police department is focusing in all areas. They're trying to get Lacey back to us.
Mine is Dennis. Rocha.
Rocha. Of the four of you, who was the last to talk with her? Did anyone talk with her that morning, and what she have to say? Or
I talked to her Monday night about 8:30.
And how was she feeling?
She was fine. She called to tell me they would be over for dinner the following evening, Christmas Eve, and we were looking forward to it.
I'm sorry, you spoke with her the night before Sunday. That was the last time I spoke with her.
I think that's
it. Thank you, ma'am.
I'm sorry. Peterson.com. It's all the case.
I was just told by the family that there's actually been a website created that's LaceyPeterson.com, and it's all lowercase.
The final thing I wanted to recap, and I brought this up earlier today, the detectives have asked that anybody who may have talked to Lacey personally between Sunday and Tuesday to please contact our department. We would like to talk to them. And that's between Sunday and Tuesday personally had talked to Lacey. And if there's no other questions, that'll be the conclusion tomorrow. I'm thinking about only having one press conference, probably about 2:30 to help for those that are out of town, and if something pops up that we need to meet earlier, I'll put an advisory out early in the morning. But as it stands tomorrow, we'll do a press conference here at 2:30. No other foul play that we're aware of, and again, we have not had our briefing for the night, but as it stands at this point, we do not have any evidence that would indicate any foul play.
Is there a suspicion of foul play?
There is none that I'm aware of at this point.
Okay. We had Mom. She was 100% guilty on the last Peterson episode.
Mm-hmm.
We now probably have someone that thinks he was 100% innocent on this episode. So we will see where we end up.
Oh.
Very excited about this case. But let's introduce ourselves before we get started. Hit us off.
I'm Elena.
I'm Mom.
And I'm Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder, and I forgot to get Mom's sayings.
I was wondering hoping if you were forget. Prepared.
Oh, I'm so happy about that.
Whatever.
I should have got a daughter once.
You say that every season.
I know.
Season.
And yeah, I forget every season.
Hold
seasons.
On. Talk amongst yourselves one moment.
Okay. Yeah, you all go right. Ahead. And all right. So, Mom, as Elena's doing what Elena's doing, hopefully bailing me out of my forgetfulness, you have provided the drink
yes.
This time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I do think you copycatted.
I did. I was going to make three drinks, but they were all liquor. But since everybody has brought a can, this is a can.
That is like your can.
Like Lana's can
yesterday.
From yesterday. Just a different flavor.
All right, so I'm going to take a drink while okay. Lana's doing what she's doing. Let me see.
See if you know which flavor. Oh. Smells good, doesn't it?
Strawberry lemonade.
Yes, it is.
Smell the strawberry.
I don't like it like yesterday's.
Ah, the orange was better, but it's still good.
Very good, yeah.
Very good. So this is Poppy. Sell them at Walmart, HEB, probably wherever you can find stuff.
Amazon.
So good, so good. As prebiotics, I guess are really good for you, etc. Okay, did you find one?
Well, not about Mom.
Okay.
But it's quite hilarious because it's really about us.
Okay, good.
Children.
I love that. Okay.
Oh, well, don't worry. I'll find one. But it says, my mother told me a million times not to exaggerate. I just thought it was funny. I'll find one. Don't you worry.
Okay, so this case, we're going to look at the Scott Peterson case. Like I said, I've put the cases in order based on what I feel as far as my, you know, what would be the word? My certainty, my assurance of guilt, and so, or innocence. So yesterday we did Michael Peterson, decided that he was innocent, and it's probably the owl that did it. Then we have today Scott Peterson. And so I want to do a check-in and see where everybody is at. So, Elena, go ahead and tell us what you think as far as guilt or innocence, where you're at.
Innocent / reasonable doubt.
Okay.
Why innocent?
Good it's question. Been a while. It's been a while, but it was based on this documentary that seemed to be neutral. And, again, I don't know innocent, but definitely reasonable doubt. I wouldn't have convicted him based on the information that I saw.
Oh, 100% guilty.
Yeah, I'm 100% guilty. But I do think that I haven't watched a documentary yet that is neutral. I'm glad you did. Most of them are either for him or they're against him. One of the things that made me wonder about his guilt or innocence was the media coverage.
Yeah.
And how they covered it. But as I dug in, like I've, you know, been saying, there's just a couple things that he did that I don't know if they're brought out in the shows or if it was only in the court, mm-hmm. you know, because there's a yeah. lot of stuff you get.
Yeah.
I had to separate that he was a real ass.
Yeah.
For sure.
And the evidence yeah. of things they found because he was a jerk.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Sorry.
We're just doing a podcast here. But I think he definitely was a jerk and he was obviously unfaithful, but you do have to separate that out. I mean, it mm-hmm. needs to be looked at as far as was that a motive? And I think I told you guys yesterday, I actually don't think Amber was really the motive. So we'll get into that. I think she played a factor in the decision, but not the sole thing. So we'll discuss as we go. But this episode's going to be a little bit different, and hopefully I can flow like we normally flow, but I'm going to go off of the court record solely because it was full of information that you can't find really anywhere else, and it basically outlines the crime and the evidence, etc., which I thought was, I mean, I didn't know that they did that, like court records. I had no idea how detailed they get in the crime. That was shocking. But the more I can find the court documents, the happier I am, because what I find is a lot of the, you know, like websites that are devoted to certain crimes, they either have stuff that's incorrect or they add exaggerations.
Yeah.
And in the court documents, you don't have that. So
right.
it's really cool. Now, this is where...
Well, hold on. I got a question about court documents.
Uh-huh.
Are you talking about the transcript of the entire trial? Mm-mm. Is that what court documents are?
No. Or just I wouldn't motions. Have time to read those. No, it's actually, this court document is his appeal.
Oh.
And appeals are really cool.
Yeah.
Because they're condensed.
Right.
And they will go into both sides. But no, the transcripts would be too much. It'd probably take me months to read them. I do have, however, on the Darlie Routier case, I do have transcripts of her testimony. So I did take that. But the documents here, what Peterson was basically saying is that his trial was flawed for multiple reasons, beginning with the unusual amount of pretrial publicity.
Yeah, there was.
There was a lot.
And then... Also, before the trial began, he contended that the trial court made a series of clear and significant errors in jury selection, and one of them is because one of the jurors was not impartial. And we'll see this come up, and I'll just show you a picture of her. She,
I feel like I remember that.
It's that lady.
Yes.
And basically, she was abused in the past.
She looks angry.
Yeah. And so she she made, it sounds like, comments she was going to nail them.
Yep.
And so they're saying that that's not impartial jury.
It's not, behavior. But for someone that disliked the media so much, he jumped at the chance to talk to one.
Mm-hmm.
Thought she was cute.
Well, and then they also dismissed many prospective jurors because of written questionnaire responses expressing opposition to the death penalty, even though the jurors gave no indication that their views would prevent them from following the law. So they're saying that, you know, they basically didn't have any, you know, enough people on the jury that were opposed to the death penalty. I probably wouldn't put a bunch of people on there that was opposed to the death penalty either. But the other question is, will you follow the rule of the law? So if the conviction supports the death penalty, even though you're opposed to it, will you follow the law and prescribe the death penalty? And they said yes. Even though they're opposed to it, yes, they will.
You know, with jurors, though, I always wonder, for years, you know, are they really following the law, listening to the law, or do they, like, convict because they don't like them? More percentage than they do by following the actual law.
I think that probably in a juror's mind, unless they're crazy, they probably believe they are following the evidence, mm-hmm. and they believe that they're making their decision based on that, but there's too much research on it. Like, even judges do this in parole boards. If you go for parole before lunch or before dinner, your chances of being denied are significantly higher than when it's first thing in the morning or first thing after lunch. Because by that time, the parole board has made so many decisions, they have decision fatigue and they're hungry. And so after they eat, they get that extra boost and they're able to go back to work. They've also found that juries do not like, let's say a woman has been, you know, arrested for murder. If she shows up beautiful and dressed well with her makeup on point, the jurors will not like her. Same thing with a man. If he is handsome and, you know, charming, no, it's the opposite with a man. They will actually like him. So it's just this bias. Yeah, it's
automatic,
a bias.
Yeah.
Automatic.
So I think it'd be opposite.
I think with the men, I don't, because if you have someone that's, you know, pretty homely looking and, you know, not well taken care of, I would probably go more along the lines of someone that just is, you know, a little bit creepy and might be dirty. And I would just associate that with a criminal versus, you know, a good looking defendant. But on the woman, I would. Like, why are you showing up with all this makeup looking like you're about to go to a job interview?
And there's bias on a man can get away with more than a woman. Like, if they have an affair, it's expected. Mm-hmm. But a woman?
She's a hoe.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Yeah. I would think that in their mind, and I'm wondering if you're the same way, automatically think that the woman is a predator.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's true, too.
Yeah, probably.
She is adorable.
Yes. Yes, she is. So this is a photo of them from the early days. Mm-hmm. They're either like early 20s or late teens, it looks like. They met in San Luis Obispo. She was attending college, and then Peterson was working in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they married in 1997, and they opened a restaurant. And they ran it together in San Luis Obispo. Then in 2000, they moved to Modesto and they bought a house. And that's when Lacey took a job as a substitute teacher while Peterson ran a startup fertilizer company named TradeCorp USA out of a leased warehouse. Which
Obispo's a nice area. Very nice.
So the warehouse, I'm assuming, is the... Do we need to stop?
He's just leaving. He was just sitting by.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if he needed to come in. And
no.
We need to, because we can pause stuff if he needed to come in. But the warehouse that he was running his business out of, I'm assuming that's the one where they found some of the evidence.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. And because I didn't know for sure. And then some years after the two married, Lacey became pregnant, and the baby was named Connor, and he was due February 2003. Goodness, that Dodge starting up.
I enjoy that truck.
Okay.
But not the floorboard.
So we have these photos of them.
Love.
She was
that picture.
Gorgeous.
That smile.
There's their wedding photo. They looked happy.
They're a very cute couple.
Yes. She's adorable.
And then this is her with her mom. And then this
is
the infamous photo. And I remember being at my grandmother's in a small Texas town when she disappeared. And they hadn't found her yet, but it was around Christmas time. And, you know, it was just like constant coverage. And I said, she's dead. You know, she's dead. They're going to find her body. And I said, wouldn't surprise me if the husband did it. Because that's usually where I go, is the husband did it. And then sure enough, of course, we know that they did find her.
I think she disappeared Christmas Eve.
I think it was. Mm-hmm.
What an odd time to pick, if guilty or not, to pick a day to murder someone, Christmas Eve.
I think they had an event that evening. It is. It's awful.
Yeah, she was supposed to go to her parents, or she was supposed to go to her mom's and make cookies and stuff.
Maybe, yeah.
It's just a weird day to commit a murder, right?
I don't know if there's any good day. So. But
no, I mean, as a family member, I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to have some thought.
It definitely bring suspicion.
Right.
Because you're going to go to family events, you know, hang out with people, and then your wife goes missing. Like, to me, it would just draw more attention, which I think it's what it did.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Because it was around Christmas, and everybody's like, you know, mom goes missing on Christmas Eve. I mean, it amplified the coverage.
So whenever you were talking about the coverage, I was going to ask y'all why y'all thought that it did get so much traction. But I bet that's why. Christmas Eve, pregnant woman, you know, in an upper middle class area. Community, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the makings. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not like into a lot of like the systemic racism narrative, but I do believe, and I have noticed, that often the coverage is around white missing females.
Yes.
And when you throw in the pregnancy, it's a really big deal versus black women. Like it's just it or Native American. I mean, it's definitely
absolutely true.
Something up, you know, and that was one of the things that a lot of people were upset with on Gabby Petito, because at the same time, two lesbian women disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I think there was also a black woman that disappeared, and they were hardly on the news at all because Gabby Petito. But
you do hear more about that. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that some more cases of black and Indian, or you know, is coming out more. They're focusing a little bit more, not a lot.
Well, and if you think about it, this was so long ago, it's going to be even more so.
Right, yeah. Right.
100%. And you know, when you look at like, you've got serial killers and typically they stay within their own ethnicity. Well, I feel that typically the serial killer that's white killing white women is caught way before. Like if you look at Sam Little, and he was killing black women for decades.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was really frustrating how the police were approaching those crimes because they were throwaways to them. And so it was really frustrating. Yeah. So it's not just ethnicity, it's also prostitution.
It is.
I believe that's why the Green River Killer, I can't remember his name.
For sure.
Why he was able to go so long because he was killing the marginalized, and people are just like, you know, they're just hookers. So
there's
a
lot
of
shows I've seen, and I think we did some on prostitutes, white, black, green, or blue. Parents were always saying it's because she was a prostitute. I never got calls back.
I
never
this. And I think that's always the case because you did have some great cops, even in the Green River Killer, that they wanted to find this guy. But it makes it more difficult because they are transient or they are on the streets. It makes it harder to solve the crime. So it's not just a lack of care in some of these cases. Other cases, the background of the victims makes it difficult.
Gary Ridgway.
That's it. Thank you. Okay. So on December 23rd, 2002, Lacey went grocery shopping around midday. She had a prenatal medical checkup. And then in the late afternoon, Lacey and Peterson went to a salon where Lacey's sister, Amy Rocha, worked. Amy mentioned that she had ordered a gift basket for a family member that needed to be picked up the next day by 3 p.m. Peterson volunteered to get it for her as he was going to be golfing nearby, and that's important to remember the golfing.
Right.
Peterson also invited Amy to dinner, but she declined because she had prior plans. That night, Lacey and her mother, Sharon, spoke on the phone and confirmed that Lacey and Peterson would join Sharon and Sharon's longtime partner, Ron Gransky, for dinner the following night, which was Christmas Eve.
I thought they were married.
Mm-mm.
No.
Nope.
No.
So then, you know, it's a normal day.
Yeah.
They're running errands, visiting the sister, making plans. That's interesting to me for a couple reasons, because... okay, if he already had planned to kill her, why would he invite her and the boyfriend to dinner?
I just wonder if it was just a spur of the moment thought instead of planning.
What do you mean, murdering her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I wondered as well if there was a fight situation. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it points to any innocence. I think it points to, I don't think he had it in his head to kill her yet. Now, we don't know for sure. It's like the dude that killed his entire family in Colorado, Chris, right?
Yes,
he had planned it for weeks.
Yeah.
So with him, it doesn't sound like it unless he's thinking ahead and trying to make things look as normal as possible. Then at 10:18 the following morning, a neighbor, Karen Service, saw the Peterson's dog, Mackenzie, wandering unaccompanied on the street wearing his leash. Peterson's truck was gone. Lacey's car was still in the driveway. There were no signs of activity inside the house, so she put Mackenzie into the backyard and closed the gate. That afternoon, Gransky tried to reach Lacey without success. So we've got 10:18, the dog is loose. We have 3:45, no one can get a hold of her in the afternoon. And then at 3:45, Amy received a call that her gift basket had not been picked up. She was unable to reach Peterson, and neighbors reported that his truck was still absent at 4:05, but back by 5:30. So we don't know when he left the house. The first witness to things being a little off is 10:18, and then he returns home around 5:30.
So it doesn't state that the dog got out two times and two different times put back in the backyard, or two different people put in the backyard?
The same day?
Yeah.
Because
I could have sworn that was one of the things that was like leaning me the other way.
If he did, it's going to be in these documents.
That's what I'm
wondering.
So there was only one?
But I do know that there were a couple times the dog was out, but I'm not sure it was that day.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't know if it was just one time it was shown in the documents.
We'll see.
Okay.
There, something about the dog was to me interesting as well. At 5:15, Peterson called Sharon and asked if Lacey was there. So that means that he probably got to the house before anyone noticed his truck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if he's calling from the house at 5:15, we know he was there probably by 5. I'm thinking, or a little after, if he got off work, he gets there, Lacey's not there, so he calls the mom. He described her as missing, which I find interesting. Like, if I was to go to your house and call, you know, mom, like, hey, Elena's not here. Have you seen her?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say she's missing. I would say she's not here. So maybe she ran an errand or something, but he used the word missing. And you know, she wasn't aware of where Lacey was, so she suggested that he check with friends and neighbors. So then Peterson called her back shortly after and then reported that people he'd spoken to had not seen her either. So Sharon told Gransky to call the police. Officers soon met Peterson, Sharon, and Gransky at a nearby park, which I thought was interesting, instead of at the house. And I guess they had all gathered there to see if maybe, because the dog, if she had walked the dog, that maybe, you know, they would find evidence of her in the park. But
that sounds familiar.
It's still just a little bit weird to me. I would stay, like I would have people out, you know, and again, we're just kind of thinking about what we would do. I would probably have at least one person at the house, and then I would be looking at the park. That way the police can meet at the house, kind of go over the situation, then head over or send some officers over. It could mean nothing. It's just weird that he leaves the house immediately.
See, my thought is, because if I'm not mistaken, she regularly walked the dog, and I think in that park.
She
and
did.
My thought would be, like, go there immediately, try to find her evidence.
She did, but we'll definitely get into why that was probably not the case at this point in her pregnancy.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I might have notes. I'm going to have to get on my computer, too. I don't know if they're on here. Okay. Gransky asked Peterson if he had gone golfing that day because he had told everybody he was going to go golfing. Peterson said he had changed his mind and gone fishing. Told what time Peterson had gone, Gransky suggested it was an unusually late time to be fishing. Well, Peterson just walked off without saying anything. Okay, so he's like, well, that's kind of late.
I used to
time
go
to
with
go fish.
Ray in Long Beach, and we always went around 5 in the morning.
Well, yeah. Early. I mean, there's all different sorts of fishermen, all different sorts of types of fishing and whatnot.
Well, this does seem to be unusual there, though. Most,
no, when she was saying 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people are not fishing in December.
No.
So that was something that got their attention because, and then the day was horrible. It was windy,
very windy,
rainy, cold.
And Christmas Eve.
Exactly. Peterson told a cousin of Sharon's and two neighbors that he had been golfing all day. So,
okay,
I'm going to go golfing, but I go fishing, and then he tells neighbors and Sharon that he went golfing.
Wonder why. Was it just a slip up?
Well, I remember him being kind of idiotic throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, he wasn't real bright about it.
I didn't think so.
He volunteered to Sandy Rickard, a friend of Sharon's, that he would not be surprised if the police found blood in his truck because he cut his hands all the time.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they suspected him right away with those kind of comments.
Yeah. So this, again, court records, interviews with witnesses, interviews, trial testimony, et cetera, that's in this document to present to the Supreme Court in California to see if he should get a new trial. Okay. So this is like under oath stuff. It's not them
right.
talking to a reporter.
Right.
Then they inspected the Peterson home. There were no signs of forced entry. Nothing appeared missing, but her purse was still there. So Peterson told officers that he and Lacey had watched television that morning and that Lacey had planned to walk the dog and go grocery shopping, which I find interesting because the day before, Lacey went grocery shopping in the midday.
Yeah, but I've had to go.
But
I almost go every day.
If she's doing all that, why did he call so early and say she was missing?
Well, the thing is that probably normally I can hit the store again, but when I was 8 months pregnant, no. I'm not going to. If I forgot something, I forgot something. And I'll either have someone go get it for me or I'll wait till the next week because yeah. I was not doing well as an 8 month old or 8 month pregnant person. Legs swollen, hurting. I mean, the whole nine yards. But the purse, how are you supposed to do that without the purse?
Yep.
He also, you know, said that he planned to go fishing in San Francisco Bay. He went to his company warehouse where he stored a boat, drove to the Berkeley Marina, fished for 2 hours, and quit because the day was cold and rainy. He said that he tried to call Lacey on the home phone and her cell phone, but did not reach her. Peterson got home around 4:30, washed his clothes, and ate some pizza, and then called Sharon to track down Lacey, which that doesn't bother me because if she was running errands, he may not be alarmed at first, but so he washed clothes right off the bat.
He called Lacey when he was on the boat?
Yeah. On the way back.
But he didn't take the call from the sister-in-law about the basket.
Right.
As far as clothes, had he gone fishing, really fishing, he may have fish stuff on him.
If he had a fish.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's one of the first things Dusty will do.
The dogs can come out. They don't need to scratch and tear up your door.
I thought they were outside.
I think they're stuck.
I kept looking out and thinking, what?
Okay, so I have a question on that. Mm-hmm. It could be because he's a man, but he only washed those clothes. He didn't go and get other laundry, yeah, like his own laundry. He just, those clothes immediately after he gets home.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's a little bit weird. And even if he did get his clothes nasty, I don't think him washing clothes was a normal procedure. And I could see him putting them in the washing machine and waiting for Lacey to get back to start some clothes. But maybe he did the laundry normally. I don't know. So I thought that was a little bit weird.
So I agree. I agree. If I am aware of times when somebody would just wash
their own, like the outfit they were wearing.
And a little bit more, but yeah. And I'm like, thank you.
Couldn't do the rest of the laundry.
But it's rare. But how many times, I see what you're saying.
How many times do you think?
For him? Oh, two or three.
Okay.
Been together over 20 years.
So it's definitely a possibility. Doesn't point to murder, but a little interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So Officer Matthew Spurlock asked what time Peter was fishing, and he also asked what Peter was fishing for and what lure he used. According to Spurlock and Officer Derek Letzinger, Peterson gave slow and initially noncommittal answers. He, quote, really didn't give a responsive time, and when asked what he was fishing for, paused, gave a blank look, and mumbled some stuff without really answering.
That's unusual for a fisherman, for sure, because I hear all about the fish, the lures, sea pictures.
We are doing a podcast. Where were you?
I had to go to the ladies' room.
Okay.
Oh, my word. Ridiculous.
Just ridiculous. Feel like you can't hold it for hours.
Sometimes.
So then he responded with a blank look when he was asked about his lure. But after some delay, came up with a size and color description. A detective, Alan Burkini, was called to the Peterson home. He found wet towels on top of the washing machine. Peterson explained that he had taken them out so he could wash the clothes he had worn that day. Inside the washing machine were Peterson's jeans, shirt, and green pullover jacket. In the bedroom, officers observed a laundry hamper nearly full of clothes. So I think they're thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where psychology intrigues me, because you want to wash your clothes because maybe you smelled a little bit from fishing, although he wouldn't say what he caught or he didn't really know the lures. Then you go into the laundry room to start your laundry, and you take the wet towels out and put them on top instead of in the dryer. So that tells me that he's not a clothes washer.
Right.
That's not what he does.
Yeah.
Because if he did, he would have put the towels in the dryer like any good husband would do, and then put his clothes in there, and then probably, you know, like, I could see him saying, well, I don't want the other clothes maybe to get, you know, like, if they don't wash well, or I might ruin her, you know, special blouse or whatever. But the fact that he did not put the towels in the dryer, that bothers me.
That's a flag.
And besides that, even if you don't wash clothes regular, common sense tells you, out of the washer into the dryer.
Exactly.
You don't have to be an expert at washing.
So, well, and it just tells me he's selfish.
Right.
That's what I was about to say. He's very selfish.
He's not going to put them in the dryer, but you're going to wash your own clothes. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Now, they also examined his truck, and they saw large patio umbrellas and a tarp in the back bed. And then inside the truck cab, there was a fishing pole and a bag containing a package of unused fishing lures and a receipt indicating that the items had been purchased on December 20th. So in other words, he didn't use the lures.
Right.
He's not the brightest bulb in the pack.
He really wasn't.
And I can't believe they're going to present that to for an appeal.
Well, they're just going through the details of the case. Okay. Yeah, they're not. This is just
pleading
the details.
Their case yet.
Peterson handed him a Berkeley Marina parking receipt that indicated Peterson had arrived or entered at 12:54. On the back seat was a camouflage jacket Peterson said he had worn fishing that day. Burkini and Peterson then went to Peterson's warehouse, and there, Burkini observed what he described as a homemade anchor made of concrete in Peterson's boat, but no long rope to attach it to the boat. So let me get to that picture here.
I wonder if it's normal to make an anchor. I would think they buy them. I've never known not one person that has ever made.
Well, let's think about my husband for a bit. The man makes.
But not most people like him.
Everything.
So here's the table.
Including his own lures.
And you've got these spots where they feel he was making the anchors. Mm-hmm. And then there's one left. So he didn't use them all, and but they, you know, that made them suspicious, and then they decided, okay, we want to talk to this guy more, and so they invited him to the station for a further conversation. So he repeated, she went to walk the dog, do grocery shopping. He decided to fish because it was too cold to golf.
Too cold. He didn't say windy.
Mm-mm. But not too cold to be out in the ocean
with the water.
In a boat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is going to be super cold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said that he went to his warehouse, then to the Berkeley Arena around 1, that he fished for 90 minutes near an area that was later identified as Brooks Island. He did not pack a lunch. He did not stop to eat on the way. And then on the way back, Peterson called Lacey on their home phone and then left 2 messages on the cell phone. Her cell phone, and then he dropped off the boat and he went home. And it was the messages just sound scripted. Hey, beautiful, I couldn't make it to get your sister's basket. You might want to get this or that for mom and pop or something. I mean, it sounded weird, but I don't know if he normally talked that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you listen to some of the messages to the, Amber and the way he talks with the news, he does. He just...
monotone.
Talks like that, yeah, monotone, no emotion.
Mm. Peterson said that he left the house with no jacket on and that he put a green pullover jacket and then put the camouflage jacket over that when it started raining. The camouflage jacket, when Detective Brocchini saw it in Peterson's truck a few hours later, was dry. So it would have still been wet.
Yeah, it would have been.
If it was, you know, folded up or crumpled in any way. So it was completely dry. And then when they went to listen to the cell phone messages that he said he left, only one voice message was found when he said he left, or 2.
Interesting.
Okay.
So what did he explain? Did he explain why there wasn't 2?
Doesn't say. And he explained that he had never fished on the San Francisco Bay before, but he wanted to test his boat out. He troll fished for an hour on the way out to Brooks Island from the marina dock. He suggested that Lacey might have been robbed of her jewelry by a transient and then kidnapped. He denied being involved in an affair. Later that day, he called Detective Burkini to check on the investigation, and he asked the police if they would be using cadaver dogs to search for Lacey. And the officer explained no, because they didn't think she was dead.
Oh, that's interesting he'd ask that.
I could see, are you going to use search dogs to find my wife, not cadaver dogs? Because cadaver dogs are trained to find dead bodies.
Okay, devil's advocate.
Okay.
If I wanted, if my husband had disappeared and I was very anxious, quickly wanting to know which way this was going to go, it might be a question. Like, I would want to know immediately if there was death.
I think I would just ask, are you going to use dogs?
Yeah.
Search dogs. I don't think I'd be specific.
I probably wouldn't either, because I would be avoiding any idea that my loved one was dead. But I could see, you know, it's like, if you want to be extremely careful, are we going to use those dogs as well to make sure if she is dead that she's found? So I've never heard anyone if they are going to send out the cadaver dogs, but I could see someone maybe asking that for being thorough. I could, you know, it still is weird, but I could give them a little bit of the doubt.
Not me, because he clearly wasn't a thorough person.
I'm almost positive. I'm going to have to look this up, because I'm almost positive I watched something within the last couple of months, and there was another individual that specifically asked cadaver.
Were they guilty?
Probably. Actually, they called the dead bodies cadavers.
Oh,
I remember. It was that older guy. I know y'all would know who I was talking about. His wife comes up missing. Then his very best friend in California comes up missing.
Durst.
He actually said cadaver in one of the letters.
Instead of dead body.
Yeah, it's super duper rare.
Yeah, it is very rare.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he's lying about the affair. He's, you know, wanting to know if they're going to use cadaver dogs. So the Modesto Police Department, in the days after Christmas, executed search warrants on the home, on the warehouse. They did confirm there was no forced entry. None of her jewelry was missing other than one pair of diamond earrings, which were probably on her. Because you could see that I think she's wearing them in that photograph.
So you think the diamond earrings were on her?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Can you up that picture or make it bigger?
Most will wear their diamond earrings all the time. We saw that all the time at the store.
Yeah, but why do you think he would take them off?
I don't think he did. I think they're with her
dead
body.
She was with him.
Those were missing. I thought you meant.
Looks like she has earrings on.
Mm-hmm. That's what she's saying.
Yeah. I couldn't see him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, what is interesting as well is, I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay. They found traces of Peterson's blood on the comforter in the master bedroom. In the sheds in the backyard, police found the cover to Peterson's boat smelling heavily of gasoline, as well as a blue tarp. The boat cover had chunks of concrete in it, and then in Peterson's truck, police found additional spots of his blood. Peterson explained that he had cut his hand on the back door. Police found small chunks of cement and a claw hammer with a cement powder in the truck's bed. So the significance of the gasoline is that gasoline makes it very hard for dogs to detect human scent.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, why would your boat cover be covered in gasoline?
Did they check the back door where he said he cut his hand?
I don't know. I have no idea. And then at the warehouse, they inspected the boat. They found a pair of pliers under the middle seat. The pliers had hair clamped in their teeth. Subsequent mitochondrial DNA testing of a hair fragment determined that the hair matched a reference sample from Sharon, which meant that the donor of the hair was the same maternal lineage as Sharon. So they're saying that was Lacey's hair, and it was not Peterson's. It did not match his.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
So during the weeks, or during the search of the home, articles that Lacey would have touched were collected to give the trailing dogs an ability to search for her based on her scent. These included a slipper and a pair of sunglasses. On December 28th, 4 days after she disappeared, Trimble, a trailing dog, was presented. Lacey's sunglasses at the Berkeley Marina. He then alerted to Lacey's scent along with a path that led out to a dock and ended at the water.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. On December 30th, a woman named Amber Fry contacted the police after a friend advised her that Peterson, whom she thought was unmarried with no children and with whom she had been having a relationship since November, was connected to the disappearance of his pregnant wife. Frey and Peterson had their first date on November 20th, and had immediately become sexually intimate.
Yep.
Their relationship had progressed to the point where Peterson had stayed over at Fry's home, picked up her young daughter from daycare, gone to various parties with Fry alone and with the daughter, and picked out a Christmas tree with her and discussed their views on having children.
November 20th.
Mm-hmm. Now, wow. I admire Amber Fry. She did not have to come forward. She did not have to make a public statement, but she did.
She had a good lawyer also.
Yeah.
She knew something was up, and she wanted it out. And it was very difficult for her to do that. I remember hearing her talk about it, that she was literally trembling.
She looks very nervous.
She was very nervous, so upset. Very upset. She would not have dated him if he was married.
Right.
The way they got together, listen to this. He hit on her friend at a party, and she's like, I'm engaged, I'm happy, but I have a friend that may be interested, and that's mm-hmm. what kicked it off. From what I understand, he did that quite a bit, actually. He was definitely a player, and there were several women that he approached for sexual liaisons, and sure enough, him and Amber hit it off immediately. And I also find it extremely ironic and irritating that he spends all this time with her daughter, but I'm going to take my wife and I'm going to kill her and I'm going to kill the son.
I 1,000% agree. It was just temporary. It was just a fling for him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you play the part.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So this is a picture of them, you know, the infamous picture of them at the Christmas party. He was definitely infatuated with her. I think she's beautiful. But I wanted to point out, you know, in our seasons, we talk about red flags. We talk about one of those being the relationship moving way too fast. This is an example.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quick.
Yeah.
He had attached himself to her, attached himself to her daughter. They're discussing children. They're discussing Christmas trees. They sleep the very first night. You know, I know people have one night stands, but that's not what this is.
No.
So I'm sure he had. I mean, he seems dumber than a sack full of hammers. He does. And he's obviously a poop bird. But the fact he was able to get into her heart that quick tells me he's very good at making women feel good.
Well, and she probably had a need, too. You know, no telling. She'd been single for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Bad yep. relationship. And Prince Charming to her.
So this is November 20th. And then on December 6th, a friend of Fry's discovered otherwise, that he was indeed married, that he had a baby on the way, and gave him an ultimatum that he had to tell Fry by December 9th or she would.
I remember that.
So he explained to Fry that he had in fact been married but had lost his wife and the upcoming holidays would be the first without her, and she's not dead yet.
Right.
On December 15th, Peterson told Fry he would be in Europe on business through the rest of the month and much of January. So that's why I don't think he intended to kill her when he did. I do think he had it. I think he had thought about it.
I agree.
Because he's telling her, I've lost my wife. But why would you say, I'm going to be in Europe for the rest of December and January? That was buying him time to figure out what he was going to do. And yet she disappears the 24th. So I'm thinking he hadn't yet made up his mind and was trying to buy some time.
Devil's advocate. Or he knew that there was going to be a lot of family mm-hmm. gatherings plus the birth of his child. Wouldn't be able to hang out with her. And he was probably showboating mm-hmm. saying, I'm going to be in Europe for this long.
Just well, yeah. No, I can see that as well. But
I agree with yours, too.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that he had decided yet. That's.
Yeah.
I think that he could have killed her before then, but instead he waits till the 24th. That's weird, like we discussed. That's just weird to do it that close to Christmas.
Yeah.
But yes, and you know, the Europe thing and all that stuff. What a poop bird. On December 23rd, after Fry asked where she should send him things while he was away, Peterson rented a private mailbox to which Fry could send letters. He called Fry that day, claiming to be in Maine duck hunting with his father, and again on Christmas Day, and supposedly still from Maine. So he says he's going to be in Europe, but then he's in Maine.
What was the first? I forgot what he said. What was the first day he called her from Maine, supposedly?
December 23rd.
Oh, 23rd and then the 25th, so not on 24th. Okay.
And then Fry agreed to cooperate when she came forward and record calls between her and Poopbird. So on New Year's Eve, Peterson called Fry from a vigil.
That was terrible.
For Lacey, claiming to be in Paris watching fireworks over the Eiffel Towers or Tower.
How did Fry find out? Was it the news?
The friend. Found out from the news.
And then he called on New Year's Day and in the days after, maintaining the fiction that he was in Europe. On January 3rd, 2003, when police confronted Peterson with a picture of himself and Fry, Peterson denied that it was him in the photo and that they were having an affair.
Oh my gosh, he's so stupid.
Is that his doppelganger?
Right here, you know what I'm saying? It's like, are you serious?
He's definitely a liar.
That is, again, an interesting psychological deal because there's a photo of you. Like, I just, that's like, you're not really seeing me. That's not me. Like, no, it is you. And the fact that he thought he could say that and get them to believe that tells you how he thinks and the kind of pride or hubris, arrogance that he has.
It's childlike, very childlike, because
that's true.
I know of a child. Like, you could have a picture, wouldn't me?
That's true. That's true. It is childlike.
Yeah.
He's just stupid.
I agree.
I mean, Mom really, just tells it like it all is. The way.
And sister, I think you're right. It's going to be a two-parter. Okay. Now, on January 6th, at the instigation of police, Fry dropped hints that her friend had learned the truth and would tell her in a matter of hours. So in response, Peterson finally admitted that he was married to a woman named Lacey and had been in Modesto the entire time. And the next day, when Fry asked if Peterson had told Lacey about her, he said, oh, yeah, and she was fine with him having an affair.
Oh, my goodness.
Later in the month, once news medias had made the affair public, Peterson, in an interview aired nationwide, which did not do him any favors.
Diane Sawyer.
Repeated.
Of all people.
That Lacey was fine with him having an affair, guys, and that he had disclosed the affair to the police immediately. Which we know he didn't.
Was it Sawyer?
Yeah.
I thought there was a local one that was young.
Well, maybe that one, but he did one with Diane Sawyer.
Oh, yeah. And
I'm like, are you
her.
Stupid?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
She is a journalist. Like, there's some people that are faces behind, you know, but that lady was a journalist.
Right.
Yeah. Now, on February 19th, at the direction of police investigators, Fry told Peterson they should stop talking. And, also, now, this is getting into some of the surveillance on the house, so we're kind of backtracking a little bit, because in January, they placed a surveillance camera outside the Peterson home, and then they put GPS tracking devices on his vehicles, including a series of cars and trucks, that Peterson rented for a few days at a time.
Oh, didn't he also sell her vehicle quickly, really quickly, and some of her stuff?
I think so.
Before they knew she was dead.
So, but he did know he was being surveilled.
Mm-hmm.
So, wouldn't that be, again, he's ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Would he have done that thinking that they wouldn't know what he was driving?
Well, yes. I don't think they knew, obviously, that he was being surveilled the way he was. But here's one of the things that sealed it for me. I mean, other than the fact that he's lying through his teeth every time you turn around, That is actually circumstantial evidence. It's legal evidence in a court of law that if you had nothing to hide, you wouldn't lie unless, and of course there's exceptions where you don't want an affair to come out, but you didn't kill your spouse. You know, some have lied about yeah. that. But he lies about everything. He's lying about mm-hmm. golfing. He's lying about using lures. He never opened the package. He's lying about this. He's lying about that. So the collection of lies becomes a body of evidence. And so it's like, okay, this is a consciousness of guilt. If you weren't guilty, you wouldn't be telling all of these lies. Mm-hmm. So then when they get to the rented vehicles, this is what sealed it for me. Okay? So he has his truck, his car, and rented vehicles that are being surveilled and then have the GPS tracking. Surveillance data from these devices and visual surveillance by the police showed Peterson driving the approximately 90 miles to his home to the Berkeley Marina at least five times in January, each time using a different vehicle. Ooh. On January 5th, he drove there in a gray Subaru, spent 5 or 10 minutes and left. On January 6th, he returned to the marina in a red Honda, again spending only a few minutes. On January 9th, he drove there in a white pickup truck. On January 11th, after determining that their cover had been blown, the Modesto Police Department shut down the surveillance. Nevertheless, from tracking data supplied by the automobile's manufacturers, people were able to determine that Peterson returned to the marina on January 16th in Lacey's Land Rover and on January 17th in a rented Dodge Dakota.
You think he was going to see if the body had washed ashore so he could get rid of it?
100%. I think he was going there to see if they were coming up.
Right, right.
Why did he take her car, rent all of those vehicles, and then take hers in the middle of it?
Maybe he thought,
again, he ain't the smartest. He
was,
you know,
not being followed, but he, you know,
and
what
he
I mean?
Wasn't
and then
at
going
the time.
To different
yeah.
vehicles.
Yeah, that is weird, but he's just an idiot. So it doesn't surprise me that he would be dumb enough to do that. But again, the fact that you're driving all these, I mean, we got how many times?
Five or six.
Five. Times that he's going to this place over and over,
in a rental.
Like that is going to make you look guilty. I think he was afraid their bodies were going to wash up, and yeah. if they did, he was going to be the first to get to them.
So yeah. he couldn't have been too far out. Mm-mm. If he thought that,
right?
Because there's no reason to take five cars,
right?
Unless yeah. you just, you know, waiting to see if the body yeah. come up.
So that right there is minus the affair. Minus the other lies, even that right there bothers me because it is guilty behavior and mm-hmm. there's no reason for him to be back out there.
Yeah, I can't do devil's advocate on that one.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the dogs, that's where they stopped.
Yep.
So the only devil's advocate move I could do is if he went out there hoping to see her, but he wouldn't do that many times that short of timed, like it was a few minutes each.
And not only right. that, if he's saying that she disappeared in the park, why is he going to the ocean?
Because that's where the dogs
oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Or, you know, stop.
They smelled her there. Okay. Yeah, that I can see that.
But so, not that short a time.
I think what I want to do is stop at that point. And our listeners can ponder. Of course, these all drop at the same time, so you don't have to ponder long. But I would so love to hear their thoughts because, again, nothing is for sure. But that is when I'm like, he's guilty. And yeah. And he has to be because, like, even if the dog smelled her, I would be like, well, that's impossible because she wasn't with me. Like, why would they smell her out there? Like, you
oh,
know,
I didn't even think of that.
Right, yeah, because right. She didn't come with me. She didn't even, like, you know, drive mm-hmm, out here that mm-hmm, day. I don't yeah. know why she would be here. So, but he doesn't. He doesn't say that doesn't make any sense. He instead goes there repeatedly to see if the bodies are floating.
Mm. It'd be nice for some of the listeners to write in.
I would love it.
And their opinions.
And I also... Would love, because we're going to dive into the whole, the baby and how long the baby was in the water, that whole controversy. We're going to dive into several things, you know, like what she was wearing, where people are like, well, this proves his innocence, that proves his innocence. We're going to dive into it all.
I'm still guilty.
You're 100%
What about
guilty.
You, Elena?
I am, that right there has me leaning. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a flag.
That was mm-hmm. a huge flag for me, too. Because at
especially
first,
especially the rentals. Because you want to get the body, put them in a rental, and then, because that happens a lot when yep. people murder.
They
I don't
rentals.
Remember it being on the news.
Mm-mm, I don't remember that.
That's why I like court doing that, documents, because yeah. you can really
and
get in there
the
and see.
And those are the facts. Yeah. That's interesting.
Very okay. interesting. Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?